This Mother's Day, celebrate the extraordinary women in your life with a heartfelt gift from Blue Nile. Whether it's for your mom, a mother figure, or yourself as a mom, find that perfect piece to express your love and appreciation. Explore Blue Nile's exquisite pearls and mesmerizing gemstones that she's sure to love. Enjoy fast shipping options like guaranteed free shipping and returns. Make this Mother's Day unforgettable with a piece from Blue Nile. Right now, get up to 50% off at BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to the Fetus Club. This is episode 11 for March 2009, Singapore Earth Hour. Hello and welcome everyone to the Phileas Club, the show where we get people from around the world and talk about what's been happening in the previous months in the world, in the news, in politics, in religion, all things like that get hacked into little bits that we discuss on the show. I hope you've had a good month, everyone. And today, I was supposed to have Turkey with me. Obviously, he's, as I've said many times, the staple of the show, but he is not here because I think he's angry for some reason, or he's just he just forgot that we had the show, which is even worse. I think you'll agree. But no matter, even he might join us in the middle of the show. We'll see what happens. But even though we don't have Turkey, we have two new panelists on the show. The first one is from Sweden, Maria. Hi, how are you doing?
I'm good, thank you. Thanks for having me on the show.
It's my pleasure. And as I was saying before before we started the actual recording, let me check that we're actually recording. I'm being very bold here saying that we're recording, but I didn't press the button. Yes, it's okay. I did. So as I was saying to the chat room, you are one of the few females we have on the show, so you have a very large responsibility on you. I hope you'll do well and you don't feel the pressure.
Oh, no, not at all.
The second guest we have on the show is Charles, who's joining us from Singapore and who's staying up. Actually, he would have stayed up and he would have gone dancing and drinking beers with his friends, I'm sure. But he's not doing that, especially for us. How are you doing, Charles?
I'm very well, thank you, Patrick. And how are you?
I'm fine. I'm great. Although the weather is sort of meh here in Paris. It's 5 o'clock in the afternoon for me and for Maria, but it's midnight for you, right?
It is. Yeah. In fact, just a few hours ago, we did we had the Earth Hour thing in Singapore.
Oh, right.
That's, yeah.
It's at, so did you turn off your computer?
No, I did not participate, to be honest.
Oh, good one, Mario.
Yeah,
that's
my,
very funny.
My Earth Hour takes place after this podcast when I go to sleep and turn everything off.
Doesn't count.
That's cheating, though.
Yeah, you do it anyway.
they had a few funny campaigns in the city, actually. I think some of the hotels had like a sleep nude offer.
What?
Or something like that.
Sleep, yeah, nude? Oh, wait, how does that have anything to do with the environment?
They were going to switch off the air conditioning in the rooms. They were going to switch off, yeah, all the power. Their special candlelit dinners all over the city. Yeah. Hmm. So.
Oh, wow,
that's quite a big thing.
The candlelit dinner is pretty clever. That's very, very nice. I would have expected the sleep nude thing to come from our friends up north, like Sweden, maybe. You're the guys who have all go on bicycles nude in the city for a day or stuff like that.
I haven't planned go nude, but I have planned to turn off the lights, turn off the computer, turn on some candlelights, and have my dinner at, I think it's 8:30 we're supposed to do it here in Sweden.
Exactly, yeah. It's the same in France. But before we talk about all those wonderful things, I want to say hi to the chat room, because for the first time we are streaming live. I've decided to start streaming more shows, and it's the first time we stream the Phileas Club live on the internet on Ustream. So hi everyone, thank you for coming. And if we have questions during the show, I'll be sure to direct them to you guys, and we can have some sort of interactivity here going on. It's like it's the year 2000 again. It's like multimedia and interactive. It's wonderful. Thanks. So we'll start straight away with our international stories, I guess. And the first one I want to go to is, let's not spend too much time on it because I'm sure we're getting sick of it already. But the economic crisis, and as Tom Merritt would say, in these tough economic times, drink, right? That's the drinking game. When you hear tough economic times, you have to drink. Everybody in the chat room, follow along. We've heard about it so much that we're a little bit over it. So I don't want to spend too much time on that. Still, I want to go quickly over maybe things that might have happened in your countries that might tell us how we're receiving and how we're dealing with the economic crisis, if there is anything of note to say. I know that for my country, for France, we've heard, of course, about AIG and the way that the scandals of leaders of companies and CEOs and presidents getting huge bonuses when their companies were losing money and when they got money from the state. And although that didn't happen exactly like that in France, there were a couple of social, how do you call it? Not firing, but, you know, people being laid off in some factories and plants and stuff like that. And I think what is quite significant is how some people reacted to that. It happened maybe three or four times in the country in the past 2 weeks that the workers took the bosses, the CEOs and presidents, hostage. They sequestered them in their company's offices. So obviously there was no heavy mistreatment, but they just stuck them in a room and said, "You're not getting out until we find a solution." And it's not something that's terribly uncommon in France, and certainly it's frowned upon, but it's not something that you would send the police for to release the guy. And it's not a violent hostage situation, but it's still pretty obviously it's sort of a bad situation to get in. And I was wondering if that would be acceptable, or if it happens in your countries, or if it's just like you just, when you hear that, you just go, "Oh my God, how can you do that?" So Maria, why don't you go first?
Well, it wouldn't be acceptable in my country, but I think the way that you're doing it in France, it's almost like a little bit of theater over it. Or from the pictures I've seen on the internet, you can see that the guy who's getting held hostage, he's kind of smiling towards the cameras, and it's not a real threatening situation. But I don't think you could legally get away with actually holding someone hostage against their will in Sweden. We're too uptight.
What would happen
legally for that? Well, I guess that the police will come and let the person out, so to speak.
I see. There is a little bit of theater going on, but it's still, it's theater because he still has to manage the PR side of it. I mean, he's not, obviously the guys who get held hostage are not happy about it, but I suspect that, you know, they can't start yelling at their employees and like fighting to get out or anything like that, because it would be a PR disaster. So that's maybe the reason why it seems like it's a friendly, not friendly, but, you know, like playful thing almost, which it does come out as, like that a little bit to an extent. Charles, what do you think about that?
Well, I heard about the thing in France on the news the other day. I heard he was just allowed to go for toilet breaks and simple things like that.
Yeah.
But with regards to how Singapore would deal with something like that, it wouldn't be tolerated at all. Yeah. whoever was involved in this sort of behavior would definitely be arrested. There would be a heavy fine and possibly even some jail time involved.
Mm. So let me ask you this then. How do you see it from, I mean, how do you think of it when it happens in France? Do you think, oh, well, it's just those crazy French guys doing something crazy again, or what?
I think we actually, okay, you go first.
No, please, ladies first. Age before, okay. Age before beauty.
How old are you?
I'm 23.
I'm 32. Okay. Well, I go. we think it's a bit endearing, I think. We like the French.
Really?
We do.
That's sweet. So you go like, oh, those French guys are taking CEOs hostage again. How sweet.
Yeah, a little bit like that. I'm speaking for myself now, but
okay, sure.
I do believe that we're kind of admiring your action. I mean, here we always grumble and think that things are wrong and we don't do as much about it, and you're always the people is always very vocal, and that's something we admire.
Mm. Okay, yeah, that's interesting that you would see it like that. At least we go out and do something and take people hostage.
Yeah.
Okay, that's a way to see it, I guess. Anything iconic like that happened in your countries, or are you guys just grumbling in your beards and going, ah, it sucks, and not doing anything about it?
I think it was an interesting effect when all the bonus things came out in the United States. Every journalist in Sweden started digging, and there were a similar scandal in Sweden with lots of high bosses getting criticized for giving big bonuses out, and even people who are actually working for the government. So it has been a big thing over here.
Did they get bonuses for money that they were given from the state? Or
yeah.
Was it just, oh, wow.
Yeah.
Okay. But, and by the way, to all the people who say in the U.S. mostly, you know, this is how capitalism works, and you have, I know it's been a big scandal in the U.S. too, but some people have said, if you can't get the right people by offering them good conditions like golden parachutes and stock options, then you're not going to get the competent people to run your company competently. And what I answer to that is, first of all, when those people get paid with money from the state, which was the case in the case of AIG, it's very much like socialism anyway, because they lost money, they got money from the state, and how is that not socialism? But the second thing is, if they, exactly, Wooly in the chat room is saying, if they were competent, this wouldn't have happened. And that's exactly my point. What if the guys are competent, they're not going to ruin your company. So why do you need to pay them in case they ruin the company anyway? How is that in the spirit? I understand why you would need to do that to get people to work for your company, but how is that coherent with the spirit of capitalism, which rewards success and punishes failure? So anyway, that was my rant, my 2-minute rant about that. Charles, anything that happened there?
Well, it's quite interesting. There was an interview with the Prime Minister of Singapore, Lee Hsien Loong, with the BBC, where I think they did ask him about how much he does make, because I think he makes 4 or 5 times as much money as, let's say, Barack Obama every year.
Really?
So they sort of asked him in a nice way to sort of justify how much he makes, and he was exactly the same reasoning that you gave, was that, you know, it's an important job and you need someone competent to manage the country. There's a lot at stake. It's a country that manages billions of dollars, and the decisions they make have huge consequences, and you need to reward someone accordingly to that responsibility. I think from the reports about the AIG bailouts and the hearings that they had, the representative from AIG gave a similar reasoning, that this is like a normal thing that these executives get these big bonuses at the end of the year. And it was pretty much a tactic to keep them in the company.
Right.
Otherwise, they'd lose too much talent and there would be no chance of recuperating.
Yeah. Okay, to finish off this topic, I just want to specify the fact that I don't mean you shouldn't give bonuses and stock options and stuff like that to people who succeed. I mean, I can understand that you need incentive to do better. That's not, you know, I can understand that big responsibilities need a lot of money to be compensated for. But what I'm talking about more specifically is the fact that the people who tank the companies, pretend that they would need those bonuses too, because it's part of their contract. I'm just wondering why it's part of the contract to begin with. Now, maybe, you know, in the case of Singapore, three times or four times the salary of Barack Obama is a bit excessive. But if, you know, he's getting paid for the job, that's, I don't really see how you would implement that in the government, you know, like, well, you know, if your country fails, then you don't get paid. That's a little bit more difficult to implement, I guess. I don't know.
Can I say something else?
No.
Okay.
Sorry, I'm just used to saying no when people ask that because of course you can. Go ahead.
Well, what has bothered me when I have followed the media coverage of this whole thing is that all the blame is placed on the people who has allowed this money to come to the, you know, the big bonuses to happen. But there is no moral or there are no judgment of the people who is accepting the money. And I think that those people are left out of it a little bit. And I think it's a human dignity. You shouldn't... No one needs that much of money, in my opinion.
Well, I guess needing the money is another issue altogether. But I agree that definitely the emphasis has never been put on the people who accept the money. I mean, you get calls for them to refuse it, but it's never the heart of the story. I mean, that's true that you could say morally it's indecent to accept it to begin with. You don't need to just, you know, be quiet and hope that no one listens and no one notices and walk away with, walk away with the bank money. So
that's, or the taxpayers' money in this case.
Yeah, that's what I meant, yeah.
Yeah.
That's very true. Okay, let's move on to the Pope, our Holy Father, or, well, some people's Holy Father, because he was very much in the news in the past couple of weeks for two comments that he made. I'm not going to quote them verbatim here, but what he said basically was he was visiting African countries and he said two things that were very controversial, the first one being even more controversial than the second. First, he said that the distribution of condoms aggravated the problem of AIDS. And the second one, he said that abortion, let me find the quote here. I'm not going to read it exactly, but still, I want to get it right. He said that abortion laws, and he was also including euthanasia, which is less controversial, that these laws are the seed of corruption in society and its foundation. Let me ask Maria first what the reaction of the media and the people were to those comments in Sweden.
We think it's rubbish. And that was basically the reaction. Obviously, this wasn't written by our Catholic population.
Maybe you can get into the make of your population, because you were saying before the show started that there's a lot of atheists in Sweden, right?
Yes, but then the majority is Protestants, and then we have some Catholics and the Free Church, but most of the population is atheists.
Okay.
But also our minister of assistance, she said that
social affairs or something like that.
of assistance, you know, when you give money to another country. Is that the wrong word?
Yeah, when you give money. Okay, I see.
Well, she said that we shouldn't take this too seriously because only 17% of the African population is Catholics. But she condemned the whole statement. And then there was also a big report. We also had some coverage from the French Catholics in Sweden, how they're
Really?
trying to bring the Pope down.
Wait, what?
Yeah, didn't you know that?
Well,
Really?
I didn't hear about bringing the Pope down. I mean, maybe they should go see in the, on the Catholic, on the Protestants' side, but definitely in France, it was not received well at all. I mean, I've said many times on the show that there are a lot of atheists in France, and even people who are not 100% atheists usually aren't very, you know, they're not very deep into the Christian faith or any faith, for that matter. I don't. None of my friends, for example, go to church every Sunday, and I know it's not uncommon at all in the U.S. to go to church. It's not surprising at all. And here, if one of my friends told me, "Yeah, so it's Sunday, I'm going to church," I would be surprised. So yeah, we didn't receive it well. And when you say, Maria, that what your minister said, that Africa is only 17% Catholic, so we shouldn't pay too much attention to it. I think it's very. I mean, that's not exactly the point. The problem is that the rest of the world is listening to the Pope, and when he says, in
I
essence,
totally agree with you. I think it's a little bit naive to think that the Pope doesn't have any power because he has
yeah,
immense power.
exactly.
So it is a problem.
And by the way, Wooly is saying in the chat room that calling yourself atheist in the USA is a nice way to get on the corporate blacklist. And I would add on the social blacklist, which is always surprising to me. But so, yeah, I think a lot of people, even if they are, there are a lot of WASPs of Protestants in the US, I would suspect that a lot of people would listen to that and say, hey, well, listen, we told you. You know, the condoms don't work, or they make things worse, or so it is definitely a concern. And in France, we had a drop of a drop of confidence in the Pope in the general population from something like 40% of people disagreed with him, and I think something like 40% also said that they don't represent their moral values. Which, you know, I sort of
In
have.
Swedish media, it said that the French Catholic, 80% of them think he does a bad job, and 43
Yeah.
wants him to have a pension.
Have a what?
You know, to be
Oh, to be retired?
retired.
Well, it's interesting that they would think like that because I think there's a lot of hypocrisy going on in the Christian world because it's a whole philosophical topic almost, but I just want to say to my Christian friends, of which there are many, you don't really get to choose. You know, the Pope is representing God. He's the descendant, how do you call it? Not the son, but the descendant, the follower of Saint Peter, and he's the voice of God in France. I don't think I'm mistaken when I'm saying that. So you don't get a choice about what you like and what you don't like about the what the Pope says. He is supposed to be the voice of God. So I don't really understand how intellectually it works that you can say, I'm a Christian, but I don't really agree with this, and I take this out and I take that out. So I think it's interesting to say that people who say they are Christian will decide what they like and what they don't like. And I don't want to go too much into it because it's a pretty a different topic, but I just wanted to say that it's a strange way to deal with that contradiction in your own morals. The other thing I want to know about is how they got, heard about it in Singapore, and especially since you are Muslim, you were telling me, Charles, that you're a Muslim before the show.
Yeah, that's right. I'm not too staunch, and yeah, I mean, I've heard the same thing that you were talking about just now, whereby people say, you know, you can't be an a la carte you know, religious follower. You can't, you know, say, I'm going to follow these few things, but I'm going to ignore the rest, you know. And you do get a lot of criticism within your own religion for doing such things.
Does that happen at all in Islam?
Oh, yeah, it does. It does. I think from the show that you did with Turkey, he said countless times, it depends who you ask.
Sure, yeah.
So, yeah, you've got different levels of faith. You know, some people, I mean, the minimum usually is they just don't eat pork. Some would pray 5 times a day. Some pray twice a day. Some fast for the whole of Ramadan. Some hardly ever fast. Mm. So it's... that's why, I mean, exactly like Wooly says now, faith is a personal thing. But the reaction in Singapore regarding the Pope's comments, there was nothing really major. I think the general attitude was, oh, he's going off again and, you know, he's not careful with his words. Because not too long ago, I think he had his brief problem with some comments he made about Islam.
Mm-hmm.
The same Pope. And so... I mean, from what I read, the reaction was very strong in France and Germany and in Holland as well, pretty much because it was a distortion of scientific facts. That the use of condoms doesn't, you know, I mean, we all know it does help the situation and it doesn't...
Yeah, indeed, I guess the abortion issue is really a moral issue and a personal issue a lot more than the fact that condoms do work and he said they didn't. That's very true.
Exactly.
It's just so naive. I mean, how can you think people will have less sex just because you remove the condoms? That's just stupid. But I was wondering what would happen to the world if we had an overhaul and got a young pope like a Barack Obama of the Catholics. I think we need that. It would be interesting.
Well, it everyone doesn't get to vote for that, so it would be difficult. But I mean, when he was chosen, I guess we can say elected in the Vatican, there was a concern that he was a lot more conservative than John Paul, and I think he was a little bit gentler for the beginning, and now it's a little bit more in what we feared. I say we as a society, what we feared that he would the direction he would take. Okay, so I guess the way you saw it, Charles, was, oh, there he goes again, that weird guy. Do you have a strong Christian population in Singapore?
Yeah, we do. We do have quite a strong Christian population in Singapore. There are a lot of churches, mostly. They're mostly Catholics here. And then, of course, we've got Muslims, we've got Buddhists, we've got Taoists.
How do you guys all get along? Is there tension or not at all?
No. There's no real tension at all. There are no riots. There are no, you know, it's religious segregation or anything like that in Singapore. It's quite well controlled. So we're quite fortunate in that sense.
Okay. Another question: do you have an AIDS problem, or because in a lot of Western countries too, the AIDS have been not the AIDS maybe, but a lot of people are under the impression that AIDS is almost under control, so they're a lot less careful, which is, at least in France, one of the reasons why it was such a big issue, what the Pope said. Do you have that same issue there, or is it not?
I think the number of AIDS cases in Singapore is very, very small, but it is going up. And I know that if you're a foreigner and you have AIDS, you get deported. So
really?
So they do take it quite seriously.
You get deported? Like...
Yeah, yeah.
Pack your bags, you're out of here because you're sick?
Yeah, exactly. Wow. Like for me, I'm a foreigner, so I think I have to go for a blood test every year, and that's one of the things they test for is for HIV. And if you do have HIV, then you're in trouble. Yeah.
That's interesting. What else do they look for?
They look for other diseases, but yeah, I mean, AIDS of course is the big one.
So if you have another disease that's contagious, do you get deported too?
No. I think it's just for HIV.
Okay. Oh, well, it's fine then.
Yeah.
Okay. Okay, I guess we beat that one to the ground. Unless you want to add anything, we're going to move on. Okay. Let's move on to another thing that's a little bit controversial for me, which it might not seem controversial at all for on the face of it. The ICC, the International Criminal Court, issued an arrest warrant for war crimes and crimes against humanity for Omar al-Bashir, who is the president of Sudan, which obviously is the person who's held responsible for all the atrocities that have been going on in Darfur for years. He hasn't been condemned for genocide, by the way, because there wasn't enough evidence. But so what he did was that he got very angry. Well, not angry, but he was making fun of the ICC, and he kicked out a lot of NGOs because they were cooperating with the ICCs in his mind. But it was just a retaliating action because he wasn't happy, obviously. So my first reaction would be, and I think that's the way most people took it in France, well, you know, that's good because that's, you know, he is a tyrant, a dictator, whatever you want to call him, and the international community is taking action or at least condemning him. What is interesting to me, though, is what happens if nothing happens once he's condemned? Would people be open to the idea of going and getting him? That would require military action. I mean, morally, it's justified to condemn him, but is it justified to go and get him and arrest him because there's an arrest warrant, right?
So the international community. Yeah, but how could they, though, since Eritrea is outside the ICC jurisdiction?
Well, I guess it is, but you know, it doesn't mean that you can't do it physically. You could, but I mean, he's been condemned, so the ICC has said he should be brought to justice. Right.
Yeah.
Go ahead. I mean, my point is the thing I'm getting at apparently they have no sound in the chat room, so I'm gonna see if that works again. I'm gonna start the broadcast again. My point is, it's almost like Iraq. Right. If it's justified that you do it in Sudan, is it justified that you do it in Iraq too? And people obviously didn't think that it was justified in Iraq. I mean, is there a parallel that can be drawn here? Is it okay to go in Iraq and not in? I mean, go in Sudan. And if it's okay to go in Sudan, would it be okay to go in Iraq? Because I have a feeling that going in Sudan would not be seen as horribly as it was seen when the U.S. went in Iraq. I'm just rambling here, but I don't know.
Well, it's an interesting point because I think many Swedish people, or most of us, were against going into Iraq. But there are voices that say we should really go and do something in Darfur because this can't go on anymore. We need to stop this murder of innocent people.
Yeah, that's exactly my point.
But I don't know why it's different, though.
I mean, it's... Sudan is also an oil-rich country, and again, a lot of the conflict comes down to like tribes and ethnicity and that sort of thing. So it's actually quite similar to Iraq, and again, you've got this, you know, there is the possibility that you go in, yeah, okay, you get him, but who do you replace him with? You know, and will you get this insurgency that's going to keep whichever, you know, countries are involved, you know, stuck in Sudan trying to rebuild the country?
Yeah, so I guess that's my point, is what makes it different? What is, because as you were saying, it's an oil-rich country, and I don't know. I mean, I think there's a lot of hypocrisy there still. Because
there is, because, I mean, I know that the West was, you know, the West reacted very well to this, to the ICC's ruling. So did a lot of NGOs, like you said. I think Médecins Sans Frontières also pulled out some of their foreign workers in Sudan, but again, you've got the Chinese that were a bit worried about, you know, what the ICC said. You've got the Russians as well that I think were a bit unhappy. The Arabs and some African nations as well were troubled by what the ICC did.
Maria, What do you think it would be justified to go in Sudan? You were saying that your countrymen were.
I'm a pacifist, but well, the voices that has been lifted here has the debate has been, yeah, we should do something, and is it the right way to do sanctions, or will that just hit the normal people or and not the people at the power, so to speak? And yeah, I think a lot of people think that the United Nations should also send troops to Sudan.
Okay, well, just, something to think about. What's try for yourself, everyone at home, it's your homework. Try to think of what makes this different from Iraq if you thought that we shouldn't have gone into Iraq and you think that we should go into Sudan. Interesting question, I think. Okay, let's move on to the local stories, of which I don't have many. I mean, I could talk to you for France about strikes and stuff like that, but you guys are getting sick of it, right? We know that it's happening in France, and okay, so that's that. Strikes. I wonder what the chat room will say. But then we had a couple of big stories at the beginning of the month. One of them was that a lot of government officials, including President Sarkozy, got threatening letters that included a 9 millimeter bullet. And there were threatening words, of course, like, I don't know, like, you are going to pay for what you did and blah, blah, blah. And he wasn't the only one to get them. So that was a big story. So we do get death threats in France too, I guess is the message.
Are they just random death threats, or was it like from a specific,
Oh, it was.
country or whatever,
No,
religious
it was apparently
fanatic?
from it was from one person who sent the same kind of letters to different people. And it doesn't seem politically motivated. It's very strange. It's not, he doesn't have any specific demands, for example. He doesn't say you have
Okay.
to do this or
So
that, or
he's a bit of a mental case, is he? Is that
probably. What, well,
okay?
I'm hesitant to say that because he might listen to the show. We never know.
Yeah.
Well, next week if you get a knife in your mailbox.
Yeah. Okay. Thank you. I'll know why, and I'll issue a retraction on the show. But yeah. So if one of our officials gets murdered, then you'll have heard about it first here, or well, maybe not first. Second story was the end of open bars in France. Because the problem is, we've had a lot of binge drinking issues. If you don't know what binge drinking is, it's the habit of drinking a lot before you actually go out to get yourself drunk and not have to pay a lot of money in the bar to get drunk. This happens a lot in open bars also, and it's become a concern to the French government. And the funny thing is, the reason why it was a big story is that a lot of other venues would have been included in that provision also, because we had like wine fairs and stuff like that. And the professionals of that industry were up in arms because they thought they couldn't have the tool, the system where you would pay an entrance fee and then be allowed to drink and try all the wines you wanted. So I thought it was a very French way to get upset about something. It was because you couldn't drink wine. I thought that was fine. Anyway.
But you're famous, though, for being so sophisticated around your drinks. I mean, French, you just drink a little bit of wine and you never get too drunk, and you can just handle it in a cultivate in a good way,
Yeah,
which we
well,
Swedish people can't. We get pissing drunk, and
really?
yeah, we do.
Oh, I have the image of very sophisticated, blonde people on bikes going to IKEA. So
Oh yeah, that's what we do all day long.
But, and then you get drunk. It happens afterwards, is what you mean.
I have to tell my favorite story next to this, because I used to live in London. I did that last year. Uh-huh. And they have also a big problem with after-work drinking over there. And yeah. The problem becomes so huge. So around Christmas time, they actually built a field hospital for drunk businessmen at the central station.
What?
Oh, wow.
That's what their that's their way of solving the problem. I think it's hilarious.
Yeah, well, you know, treat the symptoms. It works. yeah, so that's about all I have today. The rest is let's move on to something a lot more interesting. I've asked Marie on because she's lovely, obviously, and also because I thought it would be interesting to hear about something we didn't talk about last month from the perspective of the country where it's happening in, and that's the Pirate Bay trial. So can you tell us what it is for people who don't know what it is? I'm guessing that not a lot don't, but tell us what it is and then how it's being handled.
Well, it's basically the music and movie industry's trial against Pirate Bay, who is a BitTorrent, what do you call it? Everybody knows what Pirate Bay is that listen to this podcast. Come on.
Of course.
Well, it's the trial against them for, you know, spreading copyright protected material. Right. And it has been huge over here. And it has covered 24/7.
And it's still going on, right? We heard about it a lot a couple of weeks ago, and, it died out.
The will
now.
Come the 17th of April.
The what? I'm sorry, I cut you
the
off.
The verdict will come at the 17th of April. Okay. So we're anticipating the verdict. The trial is not going on anymore. Oh. But we're still waiting for the verdict.
Okay. So my question was, how are those guys perceived? Because I suspect you guys, while, you know, you're going on your bikes to IKEA, that you would see those guys from the Pirate Bay as some sort of national heroes. I could imagine that. Is that completely wrong?
Yeah, right when we're going on our bikes. No, but well, they are. Or not among the general public, I don't think so, but the media love them. They are the media's pets, and they have turned this whole trial into a circus, and they have been feeding the media with lovely quotes and laughs, so it's very easy to like the guys or be on the Pirate Bay guys' side. And of course, that has been criticized a lot as well, that the media is kind of not taking this seriously and letting these clowns do their thing. But I think many people actually want these guys to get off. By officials that feel the pressure, that feel like they have been made a fool of. I mean, the prosecutor has been the laughingstock of the whole nation, because obviously, you know, he didn't know the technology, and that has been a big focus of humiliation.
I see. How normal do you guys see this as? I mean, the fact that he doesn't know the technology, is it like, well, of course he doesn't, or...
Well, the thing is, we have a huge tradition, not great tradition, of file sharing in Sweden. I don't know anyone of my age or younger who never have file shared. And I saw this poll made by the state that said that 700,000 Swedish people are file sharing. And I think, you know, that's just the tip of the iceberg. I think it's very, very common in this country. And many young people see it as almost a right that they can have instant access to all the music and movies and everything they want.
Yeah, that's pretty much the same in France, I have to admit.
Yeah.
Charles, your country is in the midst of copy protection doesn't exist central, and by that I mean Asia. what do you guys think of that trial?
Well, I think, again, in Singapore, you know, even government housing, and everyone has access to high-speed internet. The whole city is, I mean, even in the CBD, the whole place has got wireless internet.
What's the CBD?
The Central Business District.
Okay.
Right, so it's basically the finance hub. Following up from what Maria just said, I mean, everyone here that I know files shares. And we did have a crackdown not too long ago with regards to people downloading anime. I think that
really?
Was the first major...
That's very specific.
That's right, yeah. So I know a lot of people are quite careful of downloading anime now, but as far as movies and music is concerned, it still happens, you know, all over the place. Hmm. The Pirate Bay trial has not received too much attention here. I did some research on the internet, and there was just a few articles. But one thing I noted from Wired was they were a bit disappointed because they said that these four gentlemen from Pirate Bay were activists in a way, and then all of a sudden, when they were in the courtroom, they were, you know, pushing the blame to other people. They said, you know, at the end of the day, it's not us, it's the people using the site. You know, we were not in charge of any of this. I was just, you know...
Well, that's the tactic to get off.
Exactly.
That's the whole defense line, to prove that they have not actively given out this material. They have just shown other the way. And that's also what they were prosecuted for, though, because they were prosecuted for helping to commit the crime.
Exactly, yeah.
I don't know if it's a word for that.
For people to actually do it. Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. So just a side question. You watch TV shows and stuff like that? I mean, maybe not you, Charles or Maria, but your friends watch American
yes,
TV shows
I do have
and stuff like that?
Who does that?
Yeah, it's quite common here because you don't some of the US series, you don't get them here, you know, stuff from the UK. So
and that's the problem for us as well.
Let me ask you this then, Maria. The prosecution side is mostly, I'm guessing, from the US. Maybe they have representatives in the country, but it's mostly the majors
and the
majors in the movie and the music industry from the US. Are they seen as this foreign entity that's attacking Swedish soil? Or is it, you know, well, it's our problem too and we should fix it?
Well, there was some pressure. It's 2006 when this all started. Our current legal minister was in trouble because there were talk about trade sanctions against Sweden if we don't take action against these boys. And they forced they seized all the computers. And that has been widely criticized if it was the right thing to do or if they did that because they were pushed by Big Brother. So, yeah, a little bit like that, I think.
Okay. Yeah, I know, they raided the offices, they took all the servers, and then, you know, within the next few days, they relocated their servers overseas.
They were saying they don't even know where their servers are and stuff like that, so... Okay. Something else from Sweden, Maria, or is that it?
Well, I actually have another story that I would like to share with you.
Oh, please.
And
do.
That's yesterday, actually. All the major newspapers in Sweden, the four biggest newspapers in Sweden, got together and started this huge campaign to free David Isaac, who is an Eritrean Swedish journalist, or he's a Swedish immigrant, so he has Swedish citizenship that has been kept in prison for 2,742 days.
Where?
In Eritrea.
Oh, okay.
But he's a journalist, and his crime is that he wrote some articles about the need of freedom of speech and democracy in Eritrea, and he has been sent to prison without a trial, and we have tried to free him for many years, but no success. And now all the journalists rally together and try to make this happen. So as of today, we have 54,000 Swedish people have signed this, protest list.
Yeah, the petition.
Yeah, the petition. And the campaign is still ongoing, and I hope we can change stuff. And it's unique that these four magazines that or newspapers that are usually not working together works together.
Okay. I guess in France, the liberty of the press is always a big issue. So you will have magazines that put their differences aside for issues like that is not uncommon at all. I mean, they never do it except for a few things, and that's one of them.
Yeah.
What's the state of the freedom of the press in Singapore? It's a very naive question. I'm sorry, I should know, but...
No, actually, there's not much freedom here. Everything, all the main publications are owned by the government. So all the statements, all that, it's quite controlled. They're very careful with how they go about discussing
government. And if you say something bad, they deport you?
No. It's not that bad. But
it's only if you have AIDS. I'm sorry, I'm just being silly.
No, they're actually, they are very tough. They have taken journalists in who have sort of gone rogue. So it is quite scary here. It is. But
so how far do you have to go to be in trouble? Like if you criticize the amount of money...
If you criticize the government, if you say things like, you know, the prime minister is earning too much money or that, you know, where did all this money disappear to? You know, that was meant to go to in education or something like that. Yeah. They really ask you to prepare proper evidence. Yeah. And of course, people don't have this sort of documentation. They don't have access to these files. And so as a result, the government always gets away with supposedly doing criminal things. But there's not much freedom of the press in Singapore.
I see. Okay, let's move on to Singapore then. what happened there?
All right. Well, in early March, at one of the local universities, there was a stabbing incident which ended up being fatal. It's the first incident of this kind in Singapore. I think lately, as in the past couple of years, we've heard of more tragedies taking place in schools, universities, and all that. So finally, Singapore has its own story now. basically, this international student from Indonesia was in his final year at the National Technological University, and he met with his professor, who supposedly was handling his final year project, and there was some sort of a scuffle in his office. He stabbed his professor in the back and slit his wrists while in the professor's office. And so this all took place in the one of the engineering buildings at the university. It's a 5-story building. So the professor's office was on the 5th floor. So this student ran out and ran down to the 4th floor. And if you can imagine it, if you can imagine two buildings that are linked by sort of a sky bridge.
Yeah.
And it's a glass sky bridge. So basically, and this bridge is on the 3rd floor. So now that he's run down to the 4th floor, he then jumps down onto this sky bridge.
Oh.
He stands there for a moment, and all the other students sort of see him, and he's bloodied everywhere because he's just slit his own wrists. And after a moment, he just jumps off and plunges to his death.
So
this was something quite insane, you know, especially for a country that's not used to this sort of thing.
That's horrible.
Yeah, it is. I think everyone was quite shocked by this story. The police were very careful. Sorry?
No, go ahead.
Yeah, no, the police were very careful to issue a proper statement to the press. I think on the day that the news came out, they mentioned that he was this professor was looking after this guy's final year project, and that he was potentially going to fail on this project. So that was the reason for his act. But later on, it was discovered that his scholarship was going to be revoked.
Mm. I see. And I guess the first question that comes to my mind, because I'm weird, would be, well, first of all, horror. And then, did this guy got presented in the media maybe in the aftermath of the incident as a guy who plays violent video games? I'm sorry, that's the question that I just, you know, did they point to the games and say, well, and he also played violent video games like, I'm going to say Doom because I'm old and I think in like 10-year-old terms. But did they point to that, or was this not an issue? Because that's what happens every time here.
From the reading I did online, I was quite surprised because a lot of people were quite critical of the official statements made in the local newspapers. They were saying how there will be a tendency to protect, you know, the education system here, especially now because Singapore is trying to promote itself as a hub for education, especially for university. Mm. So there is some interest there in portraying things in a certain way.
Is the pressure upon the student in Singapore particularly high?
I mean,
it sounds pressure, like he has enormous pressure on him, this guy.
Yes, pressure here is very high. From a very young age, you know, depending on how well you're doing kindergarten, depends on what primary school you get into, depending on what your passing grades are in primary school, the government decides what sort of secondary school you're eligible to enter. So it's, you're very much judged on your credentials. As far as violent video games are concerned, it turns out that he did live on campus. Most of the student accommodation on campus is double accommodation, so you would typically share a room with another student. But in his case, he was one of the few that lived alone, and the rest of his neighbors on his floor also lived alone. Mm. Supposedly, they didn't know this guy very well. He was very quiet, but he did play World of Warcraft, and he did play some other MMOs. Yeah, he did some other MMOs.
You know, the point, I guess, is even stronger if he did play, because the point is everyone plays video games. And if the media didn't point to it, then it's a testament to their, you know, intelligence, I think, because everyone plays. So, of course, if something happens, the guy is going to be a guy who plays. And if you don't point to it, it's like, well, did he watch TV? Yes. Oh, that's the reason.
Okay. No, only one major newspaper actually did mention that he played, and that was like in the first sentence of the article. But in everything else I read, there was no mention of anything like that. A lot of the article was actually based around the professor saying how, you know, he's a very approachable guy. You know, this is really an odd case. We don't know why the student did this. You know, his friends. You know, no one saw any signs of frustration or you know, anything like that. I know that there was a statement made by the university that they're going to reassess, you know, their student counseling services to try and prevent this thing from happening again. But I think there's still an official statement still has to be released. I think at the moment the story is that his scholarship was going to be revoked, and he thought that this professor that he was working closely with was responsible for initiating the process. So the professor is fine. He was rushed to hospital, of course.
Really? I figured he died.
No, he had several knife wounds. I think the knife was still in his back when the police and paramedics arrived. But yeah, he was stitched up and he was
so he's
ready
fine.
To talk to
so it's really a happy
he was
story.
Fine.
It's really a
it's
happy
all right.
story.
Yeah, it was just the gentleman himself who died. Yeah.
Okay. Well, thank you. I think we are going to. That's going to be it for the local stories too. We are going to move on to the conclusion of the show with an email. that I got from Jose from Venezuela. I think we talked about Venezuela last month. I don't know if you guys listened to the show. Maybe you can remind me because I forgot. No, I didn't. I'm kidding. So we talk about Venezuela and the fact that Hugo Chavez got the referendum passed for him to be reelected. To be reelected as much as he wants, forever. And he is actually, Jose is actually from Venezuela, and he sent us a few comments about what we said. So I'm going to read this verbatim because it's very interesting. It's an excerpt from his email. He says, "The common view in our country is not that the election was rigged as being a fraud, but that the government used a lot of public resources, as in money, state-run media, coercing public employees to vote for Chavez, to its own advantage, hence creating a decisive leverage. Therefore, even though the election was clean, there is the concern that this leverage will be implemented in the future, in future elections, which would guarantee Chavez's infinite re-elections." And I guess we were saying that it was almost legal because he was elected. But what Jose is saying is that it's not as clear cut as that. There was a little bit of coercing too. Another thing that he said was that I'm going to read here again. "I have to disagree with you regarding the lack of freedom of speech. We have a free press with newspapers and television stations that are openly against the government. However, there are severe pressures on the media in the shape of greater tax control, censorship, and harassment." "I know this might sound a bit contradictory, because in a way one could say that this pressure conflicts with the freedom of speech, which is true, but I just wanted to make clear that the media is not controlled as in other countries, as in China." So that's a very interesting precision here from Jose. And I invite everyone to send us an email if we say things that are not completely accurate, or if we're, you know, mistaken in any way. We don't know everything about every country, obviously, as we've proven many times. So if you feel like we've said something that wasn't accurate, please feel free to send us an email, and we will correct our statements in the next episode. So that's going to be it for the show. We usually do, and now for something completely different at the end of the show, but I don't have one. Do you guys have one?
I have a small one.
Okay. I got two, actually.
If there is time.
Oh, wow. Okay, so we'll take one from Maria and one from Charles. You have to choose the best one from the ones you have, Charles. Go ahead, Maria.
Okay. Well, there has been a lot of drama in Sweden the last 2 weeks about a statement that the Russian embassy made, because mm-hmm. here in Sweden we have this thing called, or we have in Europe, we have the Eurovision Song Contest, and it's huge in Sweden. We love that thing. We have these several pre-contests, so who gets selected to get to the big contest, and so on and so forth. And this has huge media coverage here. And in the last contest, they made this parody of Russian culture, where they made like a spoof techno song with a lot of Russian culture symbols in it, with like Russian dolls and Cossack dancers, and we had a dancing bear on the stage, and it was done with good humor and fun, and everybody laughed. But the next day, the Russian embassy actually filed a formal complaint against Swedish television because of the lack of taste, and they were appalled, and they thought that the people who came up with this really were sick in their head, is the quote.
Really?
Yeah.
Is that the official statement?
Yes, and then wow. The Swedish television replied with sending flowers to the embassy.
Oh, wow.
But at the same time, the Swedish television said, like, this is just humor, it's just fun and cheek. And
get over yourselves.
And we do validate freedom of speech in this country.
I'm going to link the video that you sent me to the chat room right now. And it's indeed in poor, well, maybe not in poor taste, but it's not very, you know, it's kind of an easy joke
it's
thing.
It's a parody.
Yeah.
I mean,
but
it's
not
it
like, it's not insulting. It's a funny, silly thing. I'll also put the link to the video in the show notes. If people listening to the podcast want to go check it out, please do. You'll have it in the show notes. And boy, those Russians, they don't joke around.
It's humor there, no?
Yeah. Well, I don't know. I mean,
this was a serious response
that they did. The official response was serious, right?
Yeah. It was. But it was also this ambassador. I mean, you can't say that it was the official view of the Russian government. It was this ambassador
statement. The ambassador is the representative of the government.
Yeah, but I'm not sure the government were informed, though.
Well, maybe. Okay, Charles, you go.
Okay, my story has a funny side and a sad side because...
Oh, it's one of those.
Okay. In the end, a 77-year-old man got killed.
I'm guessing that's the funny side.
The title is called Bottle Mishap.
Oh.
And basically, what happened was the 77-year-old man used a bottle to engage in sexual activity.
Oh my god! I thought that was going to be it.
And eventually. He got stuck and he went to the hospital. The doctors tried to remove the bottle to no avail. He then had trouble urinating after that and several complications occurred. And the old man passed away as a result because the complications led to heart failure.
I didn't get it. He used the bottle as a female recipient or a male recipient?
I don't know. Do you want to know?
Well, I don't know. You say he had trouble urinating.
Yeah, well, as a nurse, I must say you can get that from both procedures if you mess it up.
It was recorded by the China press, so I'm guessing this Singaporean guy was in China at the time.
Okay.
It didn't happen here.
So I guess that's a message to our listeners, too. Don't engage in sexual activities with bottles. It's dangerous.
And it's actually more common than people think, I can say as a nurse.
Stick to condoms. don't listen to the Pope.
Yes, Marie, you're a nurse, so you know that
these things do happen. Yes, they do. The weirdest thing.
Oh, my God. You'll have to tell us about...
It's not only bottles. No, I won't go into details. You have to change the rating of the show.
Yeah.
You know what? Next time we'll make a special segment of the show with funny Swedish nurse stories. Wow, that sounds more dirty than I intended it to be. Never mind. Maybe we won't. Okay, well, I think that's going to do it for the show. I want to thank you guys very, very much for coming on, and I hope we will have the immense pleasure of having you on again at some point. Is there anything you guys want to talk about to pimp your? I don't know if you want more Twitter followers or you have a website or something. Maria, oh, do you?
I want people to follow me. That's fun.
Okay.
My name is Paga. P-A-G-G-A. And you Dutch people out there, I had no idea of the meaning in your language.
Okay, so that's twitter.com/Paga. And Charles?
Honestly, I've got nothing to pimp. So I'll pimp frenchspin.com.
that's
Patrick's site.
So sweet. That's
I could pimp my armory page, but I mean, I don't think we can do that here.
Yes, well, maybe we won't. You are a WoW player, as many of you listening are, but not everyone. Well, if you want to say the name of your character, I don't know what good that will do, but go ahead.
Okay, you can look for Booyah. B-O-O-Y-A-H.
Well, that was good just by saying the name. It was awesome. Okay, so that's going to be it. I want to thank everyone for listening, everyone in the chat room who stayed, even though there were a couple of problems. It was the first time we did it on this show, and I stepped on something I shouldn't have. But it won't happen again. The site where you can find the show is, as always, the Phileas Club, but it's also now frenchspin.com, because I've consolidated my websites, my different blogs, and they're all united happily on frenchspin.com now. And the email you can send messages to us is phileas@frenchspin.com. I guess I won't spell that out. Just, it's easier if you go to the website, because it's, I don't know why I chose that name. It's silly. Phileas. It's beautiful, but it's not easy to remember. So frenchspin.com is the website. And Not Patrick is my name on Twitter. Of course, you can follow me there and enjoy all the silliness I display on that little page thing. And if you want to listen live, you can probably do it next time we record the show, which will in all likeliness be at the end of next month, at the end of April, probably the last Saturday of April at 4 p.m. GMT. And to know what time that is in your city, just figure it out, because I don't know. And obviously Turkey doesn't either. I'm not going to let that one go. Okay, so again, thanks a lot to everyone. Thanks to the listeners. Thanks to the chat room. And we will talk to you all next time. Bye, guys.
Bye-bye.
Bye, everyone.
Life's better with American Family Insurance, because our home policies help protect your dreams and come with peace of mind. Save up to 25% by bundling home, auto, and life. American Family Insurance. Get a quote, find an agent at amfam.com.
Products not available in every state. Discounts may not apply to all coverages on an auto or home policy. Discounts do not apply to life insurance policies. Visit AmFam.com to learn how discounts may apply to you. American Family Mutual Insurance Company, S.I. and its operating companies, American Family Life Insurance Company, 6000 American Parkway, Madison, Wisconsin.